Welcome to In My Own Words, where we stand on our opinions like I stand for Nike owing us sneaker reparations. Y'all owe me some dunks that I'm pretty sure the kids stole. We'll talk about this. Let's start the show. Welcome to In My Own Words, episode 67. I'm your host, Tony R. Sanders. Happy to be here with you guys. Happy Thursday, everybody. Another Thursday, another pod. You know how we roll. Man, a lot to talk about this week. A couple things we got to cover. I had a debate with myself. You ever have a debate with yourself? You ever go inward with yourself and just say, okay, self, we got to talk about this. I had a debate with myself over all the things that I wanted to talk about, right? And you guys know I go through my list and all these things. And I wanted to talk about Chris D'Elia. If you don't know, he's had some more allegations come up, and I think it's all very, very interesting, which led me to a bigger conversation that I wanted to talk about, cancel culture and all this. But then something happened. Something happened that struck a chord with me that I couldn't let this week go by without talking to you about. And it was the story about West Coast Joe. West Coast Joe. Do you guys know anything about this? Let me read you the story. Let me actually pull it up. Let me do my propers as a, I almost call myself a journalist. Ugh. I'm not a journalist. I don't even have a journal. Let me do my best as a podcaster who likes to bring you information and a person who attempts to base all of his opinions in truth. Let me read you the truth so we can get, you know, started from the same starting point. This is from Bloomberg. It says, Nike executive leaves following report about son's business. Okay. A Nike executive, Ann Herbert, abruptly left the company following a Bloomberg Businessweek report about her son operating a business reselling sneakers and using a credit card in her name. So let me break it down for you. As a kid, white kid, he goes by the name of West Coast Joe. He got caught. I don't even say caught is the right word. This idiot did an interview. He did an interview with Bloomberg about his fledgling, amazing sneaker resale business, not thinking that people would know that his mom runs the North American leg of Nike. And he's using her money to buy sneakers. Now, some of you may be so dense that you're just like, well, what's the problem with that? You know, he uses my money to buy sneakers. I use my mom's money to buy sneakers. It's not a good problem with that. Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, let me tell you something. First of all, when your mom works for Nike, it's automatically a conflict of interest for you to resell Nikes. Because don't tell me when your mom runs the North American leg of the business, you're not getting inside information. Now, I know that it's kind of popular for some parents to never talk to their kids. But when you're in the sneaker business and your kid is in the sneaker business, you've worked there for 25 years. I don't think this kid is even 25 years old. He learned this from you. So when you both have a passion about sneakers and he's making, quote, hundreds of thousands of dollars per month, no shot y'all not talking about this. You have to be talking about this with your son. So that's insider information. Number two, the crime that had to happen for this to take place. There's a crime somewhere. There is a crime somewhere. The only thing that's missing from this report is who's going to jail. You know what this reminded me of? This is exactly what this reminded me of. And maybe this is just the way my brain works. Maybe it didn't remind you of the same things, but this is where I'm at with it. This is the classic gangster movie. This is how it all ends. This is the moment that led to the detectives and the FBI waiting on Frank Lucas outside of church. This is the moment. This is the moment that almost got Sam Rothstein killed, right? Buried in the desert. This is the moment where his car blew up and he was almost inside. This is the moment. This is the moment, okay? Now, what do I mean by that? The moment that led to Frank Lucas going to jail and eventually flipping and becoming One of the best known snitches in Tekashi 6ix9ine. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, I said it. Frank Lucas is the most popular snitch pre Tekashi 6ix9ine. Nobody did it better. Nobody did it. Denzel was in there with his coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, no, you got to get this guy with that guy and this guy. Like, he rolled over on the whole industry. He snitched on everybody. But what was the moment that brought him to that point? That's the part we got to look at. What was the moment, the turning point in the film, the turning point in his life, right? It's a real story that got everything to go over the side. And it's always the same stupid thing. Being too flashy. Being too flashy and a woman. I'm just going to say it. If Frank Lucas was gay, he never gets caught. If Frank Lucas had a guy instead of a girl, he never gets caught. It was his woman that decided you needed the fur coat and the fur hat to match. It was his woman that wanted to go and sit front row in you know, with the big pimps and players and athletes, front row at the fight with the fur hat and the fur coat. It was his woman that did that. Frank didn't care nothing about that. Frank was keeping a low profile. Frank just told his cousin that he was his brother. He's wearing a clown suit. Frank wasn't about that. Frank knew to keep a low profile. He was good doing what he had to do. But when you get into a relationship, there's certain obligations. So all I'm saying is this. Don't get too flashy, because when you get too flashy, that's when trouble starts to happen. So Frank Lucas got too flashy. Next thing you know, they're waiting on him outside of church. They're running in, blowing up his whole operation. With West Coast Joe, we see the same thing. I looked up this kid's Instagram, right? Let me give you his Instagram handle so you can look it up too. Because if you're doing sneaker reselling, and we'll talk about my story with sneaker reselling here in a second, but if you're doing sneaker reselling, especially at this large of a scale, there's no shot you're not promoting yourself online. It's 2021. You got an Instagram popping, a Snapchat popping, a Facebook. You got something online that's popping, right? Now, you're online to sell two things, your sneakers and yourself. It doesn't work one way or another. What's the kid's name that was getting popular with DJ Khaled when Khaled was blowing up on Snapchat? Benny Kicks? Something like that? Yo, how's business? Booming. That kid, I don't remember his name. He had to sell his brand and his product. I don't want to go all sales one-on-one for you, right? But when you're selling anything, you have to have people convinced of the industry first. It's three levels of selling. They got to be convinced on the industry first. Of course, everybody is convinced on the industry of buying sneakers. Not everyone's convinced on buying rare, high-end sneakers, but everybody is in on buying sneakers. And then you got to convince them on buying them from you. Because I'm going to be honest, I never heard of West Coast Joe or West Coast Streetwear prior to this week. So they got to be convinced of buying them from you. So you have to do a good job of building your brand and the brand of the quality of the sneakers that you provide. There's a kid that's doing this really well. He has a sneaker shop in New York City called Sneaker Pond. And they have a Facebook Watch show that I love. I've binge watched every episode on Facebook Watch about Sneaker Pond. Amazing job. But again, it's about the kid and the kicks. So when I look at this kid's Instagram, I'm going back through all the pictures. And at first, it's light, you know, 100,000 pairs of shoes and Nike this and 350s that and whatever. And then I see a picture of him in a LeBron jersey. And I said, oh, let me see what this kid looks like. His face is pixelated. I mean, you see him, but you can't see his face. His identity is unknown. And I go back a couple more pictures. I'm like, oh, maybe that was just one picture. It looks like an effect. He did something cool. So I go back 34 weeks, 39 weeks. I get all the way back to 41 weeks ago. Another picture. He's standing in someone's kitchen holding some kicks. Some nice shoes, too. Jordans. And his first face is blurred out on that one, too. And then I go down. Let me go down on another one. Every 44 weeks, another blurred out picture. So every time this kid shows his face, he's not showing his face. That lets me know he knows he's doing something wrong. This is the gangster that's trying to get by, but still keep a low profile. So on all the pictures, if you look at his Instagram, and his Instagram is west.coast.streetwear, he's hiding his face like her in all of his, he's hiding his face like Sia in all of his pictures. Now, I still think that's kind of stupid, right? Like, I think if I know this kid, I think I can still tell who you are without the face. It's like those TV shows where they blur out the face, but they keep the same voice, and I can see your chin. I know that chin. Ain't too many people got three chins lined up that directly like that. I know that chin. I know that chin anywhere. That's grandma chin. You know what I mean? Sorry, grandma. I didn't mean it. That was just the, you know, I'm flowing. When I do this podcast, you know, it's a pace. I'm flowing. My grandma's not going to listen to this. Anyway, what I'm saying is there's still identifiable parts. He's standing in somebody's kitchen. I don't know if that's mommy's kitchen or his kitchen because he's making hundreds of thousands of dollars per month. But a bunch of pictures in the same house. Like, what I'm saying is there's ways to identify this. But he's been doing this for a while. I'm going back seeing pictures years old. Apparently, he was getting away with it. Apparently, everything was going smooth, fine, and dandy. But then he had his fur coat, fur hat moment. This idiot decided to do a write-up in Bloomberg. A full article about how resellers, sneakerhead, let me give you the title, how sneakerheads turned Jordans and Yeezys into an asset class. And it's featuring Mr. West Coast Joe. Now, at what point during this gangster Frank Lucas style, Nicky Barnes style, Joe Pesci and Casino style, Sam Rothstein style, Goodfellas, you know, Ray Liotta style operation, at what point did you decide to go do press? Huh? Like, you feeling yourself that much? You got away with this crime for so long that you decided to go do press. So there's a whole write-up on Bloomberg about how he's taking these shoes, Nikes all, by the way, and turning them into millions. Well, of course, I know that when you interview someone, one thing you want to do to make sure you have your facts straight is you research them. You get into the deep, dark webs of the internet. You get deep into the Reddit thread. You get deep into your Rolodex, for those of you who remember what that is, and you call around. And then when you get the kid in front of you, you ask some questions and you do, right? And of course, when you put that out on the internet and this page starts to blow up and this guy starts to blow up, other people want to look at it too. And people get mad when they look at it because I want to know why I haven't been able to get sneakers on the sneakers app, and now I know why. Nike is selling sneakers to this kid, and this kid is reselling them for five times the amount, 10 times the amount on the internet. Now I can't get my dunks because this kid is ripping all of us off. I love sneakers, right? And you wouldn't be able to tell if you saw me today. If you saw me in person, you wouldn't know on a regular day, you wouldn't be able to tell that I love sneakers, but I have a story for that. I have an explanation. Here's the explanation, okay? When you get married and have kids, it all comes back to that. I try to explain to people, right, that your wedding day for a man is really, how do I say this? It's really your funeral? I don't know how else to say it. And that sounds bad, but let me explain to you. It's a funeral and a birth, okay? The old you has to die so the new you can live. And the new you is kind of a punk. I'm not going to lie. The old you is not going to be happy about the new you. But the new you is the better version of you. I do want to say that. Like, the new you is the better version of you. But the old you is going to be mad about it. The old you would take the new you's lunch money. Excuse me, lunch money. That's how that works. Almost choked on my coffee. Almost died live on air. That would have been crazy. Technically not live. You guys would have never seen this video. Unless my wife was like, this is going to go viral. We need that money because the insurance ain't came yet. What I'm saying is this. At the wedding, you die, right? That's why they put a suit on you that you didn't pick out. They wanted you to wear. They picked out the colors, and they put you in front of the church, and they make sure you smile. Doesn't that sound familiar? You're not even there, really. You know, like, you're not even a part of the process, really. You're not even there. You're there, but you're not there. They put you up in front of the church in this suit, and they make you smile. They put a smile on your face, and you have to stand there and smile. And then they, you know, have six of your best friends who they call groomsmen, but I know a pallbearer when I see one. They stand next to you. Those men stand next to you because they know that's the last time they're ever going to see you. Unless one of your other friends decides to die, and we all go and see him off as well. This sounds so morbid, but if you think about the analogy, it follows through. It follows through, okay? So you're standing there in this white light from the back of the church. Comes to take you home. That's what happens. And she comes, and the moment she gets there to you, and you guys lock eyes, and she's smiling, and you're smiling because they told you to, you're dead. And when the pastor, the ordained minister, whoever the officiant says, I now pronounce you husband and wife, you may kiss the bride, you're born again, and you're a new guy. And there's a lot of things that you lose in that moment that you didn't realize you lost. One of those things is speakerphone. You can't use speakerphone anymore. You don't know what some of these people are going to call you and say. You got friends that, you know, they're not living the same lifestyle as you. They're not on the same vibrations or the same frequency. You don't know what they're going to call and say. The moment they call and, yo, where the hoes at? You can't put that on speakerphone. That's not appropriate for everybody to consume. You can't do that. You lose that. Another thing you lose, especially once you start having kids, are some of your financial liberties. Some of the things that you would just splurge cash on, and it didn't matter because it was only you, or it was you and your queen, and you didn't have to, you know, struggle. You didn't have to have extra money put aside in case somebody breaks a wrist or breaks a leg or needs glasses or needs the orthodontist. You know what I mean? Like, you don't even need any of that stuff, right? And for me, that was sneakers. I used to live at the sneaker store. Shout out to my buddy Mike Watson, Uncle Mike, who had a store in Broad Ripple in Indianapolis, Indiana called Got Soul. I was in there all the time, to the point where Mike would text me when he got something in that I liked before he put it out on the shelf. And I was in there. Or Mike would say, yo, they only making 100 of these or 1,000 of these. I got a pair in your size. Now, he was working me. I didn't care. I had to cash. I'm like, yo, I'm pulling up. Right? And so I love sneakers. I always saw sneakers as something that you use as a form of expression. I'm very mellow on the outfit. You know what I mean? If it were up to me every day, honestly, I would wear all black. As a matter of fact, the moment you know that I've made it, when I start making some dough, I'm Steve Jobs in it. I'm wearing all black. I'm just going to have different variations of all black. I'm wearing all black. It's going to be simple. I don't got to be flashy. It's going to all black. But the spot where I can get a little freaky is the feet. Okay. That didn't sound the way. Okay. I'm back. I want to wear all black. Matter of fact, the moment you know I made it, right, when I got some money, I'm Steve Jobs in it. I'm going to wear all black. The spot where I could get a little spicy is the sneakers. Is that better? Sounds better, right? The spot where I could really show some personality, some true expression, is some true art is the sneakers. And that's really where I wanted to take the game. But when you got to buy six pairs of sneakers every time you buy one, it don't work like that no more, bruh. You're going to get the same black Pumas that I've been having for the last 6 years. And it's going to stay at that because I got to buy six other pair of shoes. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it's always been a thing of collectible art that I can use and wear as a form of expression. And then one day, I was at work minding my business and I downloaded the sneakers app thinking that I could, you know, just dream a little. I can't buy these shoes, but I could dream a little. And this is when the 350s were coming out. And I was like, oh, the Yeezys. I got to cop me a pair of Yeezys. And I got in line. I bought them, you know, 9:59. I'm hitting the app, 10 o'clock. Oh, I got them, right? Bought them for, I don't know, $300. Sold them 3 days later for $800. Winning. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm back in the sneaker game because this is the way I'm going to win. This is the only way I can get sneakers in my hand. I can examine them. I can admire the art. And then I ship them away. And I get more money back than what I started with. This is a win-win for me, right? For someone who is a sneaker lover who couldn't get back into the sneaker game because he has 4 kids and a wife. This is a win for me. And then bots came out. And people were just creating new accounts, giving their credit cards to bots. And the bots were buying up everything faster than we could. Or so we thought. Until this week. When we realize that what's actually happening is Nike is giving their employees the best employee discount ever. We're going to give you hundreds of thousands of dollars in shoes that you can buy from us with insider information because you know what's coming out. You know how many we're going to make. You know the limited run. You know the dates. You have everything to get in order. You have mommy's credit line, which you've worked at Nike for 25 years and you're an executive that runs all North America. That credit line is limitless. It's a sure bet. Yes, you're buying sneakers by the hundreds of thousands. That's why I can't get any sneakers on the sneaker app. They have some my favorite shoes, the Dunk. Bar none. Like, the Dunk is my favorite sneaker. They had some Dunks on there the other day, a couple weeks ago. Like, oh, I have to have these. Not even a resale. Like a kid around here is going to miss a meal because I got to have these Dunks. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting the Dunks. Bruh, when I tell you I woke up at 8 a.m. for a 10 a.m. drop and was just looking at my phone like a crackhead looking for that last hit, I was just looking at it like, you know how when you DoorDash something and they show the little map on how close it's getting and you just keep watching it because you're so hungry? You done DoorDash 3 salmons, 2 steaks, and some lobster tails, way more than you could eat. I'm looking at my phone like, please, right? The same way we was glued to our phones and our TVs with the election results, I'm glued. 9:58, I'm already hitting like, I'm in line. Nothing. Didn't even get a whiff. And I don't wear like a super popular shoe. I got big feet. I can fit a 14, a 13 in some cases. Who is buying up all the 13s and 14s? Joe West Coast, apparently. Apparently the kids of Nike employees are running a scam. It just feels like an illegal operation. It feels like they're washing money. It feels like everything, and I want my sneaker reparations. I feel like Nike, now that you've made this discovery, first of all, somebody needs to go to jail. Lil homie quit her job because her son's an idiot doing press, right? So now she has to quit her job. But forget quitting your job. Where's the scam? Where's the jail time? We need the whole empire to fall. And as a part of that empire, we need a class action lawsuit against Nike to get our sneaker reparations. Everybody who has ever been in line on the sneakers app to get your favorite pair of sneakers, the ones you waited and saved for, the ones that fell right on your payday. It was a match made in heaven, and you didn't get it because this punk kid was using his mommy's information, his mommy's credit card to buy your sneakers. We should need a class action lawsuit where everybody gets one pair of sneaker reparations. The pair of your choice, you get to choose. Nike just opens it up. Hey, we got the data. We know you tried to get these sneakers. We know it didn't work because Joe West Coast was stealing them all at the back door. You get one pair. Sneaker reparations. Nike, call me anytime. I'm available. All right. Moving on, man. I watch a bunch of documentaries all the time. I think you guys know that. I love watching documentaries. I feel like it's one of my most favorite forms of the visual arts. I've done a documentary myself. with my family about the passing of my mom. Matter of fact, it's on my YouTube channel. Go and look that up. I don't remember what it's called, but came out a couple years ago, and it was pretty cool. But I love watching documentaries. So I watched a couple documentaries of the week. As a matter of fact, some of the ones that I have on my list coming up, There's No I in Threesome. I'll be watching that one soon. And there's another documentary, Billie Holiday had a movie just came out. It was another documentary. But anyway, one that I watched recently, it just came out. My friend texted me and was like, yo, are you watching the Biggie documentary that aired on Netflix? I got a story to tell. Came out March 2nd, I believe, yesterday or a day before, March 1st. Anyway, came out, and I was looking forward to watching this documentary. And so I'm looking forward to bringing you guys a two-word review of Netflix, Biggie, I Got a Story to Tell. You guys ready? Here's my two words. Last one. That's it. Last one. This is the last Biggie documentary I ever want to see. We've had enough. This documentary proved there's nothing else left to tell. There's nothing else left to tell. Now, let me start with love, as I've learned. The things that I loved about this documentary was, and any documentary, right? If it's about a well-known person, the difficult part is, if they're well-known, their story is probably pretty well-known, and we know everything there is to know about this person, and so it doesn't make it fun to watch their documentary for you to tell us the same old thing. The thing that I love that I didn't know, that a lot of you may have known, D-Rock, Biggie's best friend, the one that took a bid for Biggie, when Biggie could have went to jail and they both could have went to jail, it was all over. D-Rock took the bid for Biggie. Biggie became successful and took care of D-Rock. But the whole time, D-Rock was recording everything. And I'm going to be honest, that struck a chord with me because my dad records everything. I was just looking at a video the other day. It was September 11th, 1993. It was two of my youngest brothers, their birthday celebration. We had it all, you know. Their birthday was 10 days prior to this day. But we got all together at grandma's house and put some meat on the grill. And we celebrated my little brother. Shout out to Thomas and Timothy. Right? And so to see that old footage of D-Rock when they're in Davenport, Iowa. And where they're in this city and doing this show and the view from the state. That was dope. I got to give him credit for that because I loved seeing that footage. And I had no idea that he was recording that. I also love this documentary. They got more of Biggie's family involved, and it was about his entire life, right? Most of the Biggie documentaries that you see, it's about his death, or it's coupled with Tupac's death, right? And you see these short series or reimaginations of what could have happened and all this. It's normally about the death. I love that they celebrated the life of Biggie. I love that his mother was involved. I love that D-Rock was involved. I love that Junior Mafia was involved. I love that Diddy was involved. And it seemed like a family thing. It seemed like the people that were close, Faith was involved. It seemed like the people that were closest to Biggie when he was alive made money and did well off this documentary. So I'm happy about that. Because initially I was like, I don't need another. Like, what are you going to tell me that I didn't already know? And there was a few spots where I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, and they went into his mom's story a little bit, which I thought was dope, and how her and his dad met and what happened. And, you know, she was falling in love with this guy, taking her to concerts. She was 16, young. He was swooning her and all of this. And it wasn't until she got pregnant with Biggie, she found out he was married the entire time. Heartbreaker. That broke my heart. When they told that part of the story, I was like, oh, that hurts, right? Another part that broke my heart was when they showed that Biggie's grandma living in Jamaica. That was a dope part of the documentary, too. They went to Jamaica and got family and his roots there and what was going on and how his mom was raised there and how he was even at 6, 7 years old rapping in Jamaica and getting that style and the rhythm and, you know, how dynamic of a rapper he was with the rhythms and the way he put words together, which was different from anything we've ever heard up until that point. It was like, yo, a lot of that is in reggae. A lot of that is in his Jamaican roots. So going back to there, but when they show that his grandma just woke up one Sunday morning and turned on the news to find out that her grandson had been shot and killed, murdered. And that's when she found out. Like, that's heartbreaking. The fact that D-Rock was the one that had to put in the call in to Miss Valletta Wallace to tell her her son was dead. She's so dope, man. Like you, when you talk about a mother's intuition, when you talk about like what my ideal of a mother is, who is, you know, loving but also firm and disciplined, and like that's who my mom was. Like, my mom was loving, but she didn't take no crap. And if you was doing wrong, she was going to call you out about you doing wrong, and it was going to be known, and you were going to know where she stood on that. You never had to guess with moms. And that's what Biggie's mom was, too. It was like, look, I know what you're doing. I know all the things that are going on. I'm not into it. We're opposite worlds, even down to the type of music that you like. A lot of mothers would just try to be nice and be like, oh, you like rap? Let me hear that song. She was like, boy, I like country and Western. I ain't listening to no rap music. She even says she only listened to Ready to Die one time. She's only listened to it once. It just wasn't her thing. And of course, now I'm sure that's a painful experience. So they had some elements to this documentary that I thought was dope. I love that this is kind of like an official documentary for Biggie by Biggie's people. I love that they showed the gangster that put him on to the crack game. I love that they told the story about the black crime family that he was in it with, and how, you know, he escaped death there. He escaped death a couple times before he eventually passed away at 24. So I love how they covered this, but please let this be the ending. Please let this be the moment where we say, okay, that's enough, Biggie. Let that man rest in peace. And of course, if his family, you know, wants to do other things to be able to make money, like they had the film come out, I assume that they were very involved in that. I saw D-Rock with a Ready to Live shirt on instead of Ready to Die. I thought that was pretty dope. I'm sure they're making money off his albums. He sold over 30 million albums. I'm sure they got other ways of making money just outside of Biggie. That was one thing too. Like, his mom was still working, and you know, she studied to be a nurse and was a school teacher, and like, she was doing all right. You know what I mean? She couldn't even wrap her mind around what Biggie was doing. Like, it didn't even make sense. Her friends were calling her like, have you heard your son's album? It's got so much profanity. And she was like, what? No, I'm not, you know, I don't listen to that. And he was like, mom, you're not supposed to listen to my album. I love he was saying, my album is for 35 and under. You're too old to listen to this music. I love that, right? Because I've been there before too, where my mom, you know, I put out a song one year for New Year's, and it was like talking all this flashy stuff, popping bottles and champagne. And my mom just shot me a text and was like, so that's how you living? You getting drunk off champagne? And like, I was just with you for New Year's. We was at church. We was at watch meeting. You wasn't getting I was lying in my songs and everything. But mom kept it real. She was just like, what are you doing? And that was another thing that connected me with the parallel. So my two-word take is last one. I think it's good. I think you do kind of learn some new information. You get some new perspectives, which I think is cool. His family in Jamaica, the jazz musician that was, you know, kind of comparing his flow to a bebop drummer. I thought that was pretty dope. So you get some cool stuff there. You get the D-Rock footage that I don't think has been seen before. So, but it's still the same story, right? And how many times do we need to tell this story before we say, okay, we got it? Love, respect, rest in peace. Is a legend, always will be a legend. Nobody will ever take his place. But please let this be the last one. So I would definitely recommend you going to check it out if you haven't yet. Biggie, I Got a Story to Tell on Netflix. Really well done, obviously produced. I like the way they put the story together. But again, it's another Biggie story, and I think we got enough of that. Okay, last thing before we get out of here. Marriage advice that nobody asked for. Let me pull that up. I was looking on Reddit today, trying to look at someone. I thought this was an interesting one. This is a little different from the ones that we've done before. So if you don't know, in this segment of the show, Marriage Advice Nobody Asked For, I go on the internet, I scour the internet, me and my team. which is also just me. Look on the internet for people talking about marriage, asking marriage questions, or commenting on marriage, and we give them advice even though they didn't ask for it. So this one is coming from James. I'm just going to make up a name because I don't want to, you know, put anybody out there. The subject is my attraction to my wife keeps getting stronger. Has anyone felt this, or does it stay the same? Lately, I can't get over how attractive my wife is. It just grows and grows. I've been attracted to her since the first time I laid eyes on her a few years ago. And now, after having two kids, every inch of her being just sets me on fire. Okay, James. All right, brother. She hates her post-pregnancy body and is always getting down on herself and will never believe how beautiful I think she is. I just wish she could see what I see. Does anyone ever become more attracted to their spouse other than me? First of all, James, my first thought is, what'd you do? What'd you do? I mean, for you to go and make this post on the internet on the spouse appreciation portion of Reddit, which I appreciate, it's dope. My first thought is, what did you do? How bad was it? Because that the way that it's just, she just sets me on fire. Da, 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 da. All right, bro. Two kids. What did you do? What did you do? Okay. Now, let's say, for the sake of argument, James didn't do anything and he really just loves his woman. First of all, James, I agree. Every person should love their wife like that. Here's my theory. The more you experience with someone, the ugly stuff. I'm talking about like the stuff that life throws at you that you just never would have guessed that would hit you. And the more you go through that stuff and she stays by your side and continues to support you, that makes someone, in my opinion, more attractive to you. So even though the shape ain't what it was, even though, you know, the weight has come up a little bit, even though things have changed and the body has changed and the hormones have changed and this kid's yelling and emotions and da 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 da, you can't replace those experiences. When you hear people saying, there's no way I could start over. When you hear me saying, like, bro, if this one don't work out, I'm good. I'm just going to be single because there's no way nobody could ever replace what she's done for you in your life. And that's going to always make her more increasingly sexy to you. Here's a pitfall that you got to watch out for, though. If she's not happy with what she looks like, or if she's not emotionally there, feeling that she is as sexy as you think she is, or feeling that she is as beautiful as you think she is, you may run into an issue where she's not readily able to express that to you, if you know what I mean. When it comes to those times to being intimate, when it comes to those times to being affectionate, when it comes to that time for you guys to have your private moments, she may not be as into it because these insecurities are piling up that she just doesn't feel like the woman she once was, or she doesn't feel like the woman you describe her to be. So number one, never stop complimenting her. Never stop telling her how beautiful she is. Never stop telling her how attracted you are to her. Never, ever stop pumping her up and feeding her emotions and feeding her ego and telling her the truth about how you feel. Never stop doing that. But also be there as a support system for her and a resource for her to feel good about who she is. Because if you lose that, you lose it all. So make sure you get to the position where you're also helping her become and remain the person who she wants to be. Whether that's going to the gym with her, whether that's going to therapy with her, whether that's just spending time together, writing out a list, all the things that she does enjoy about herself, or working on the things that she wants to change, whether it's just perception or whatever. Continue to build that bond. Just because you feel a way about her, if she doesn't feel that same thing back, she may not be able to appreciate it in the way that you want her to appreciate it. And she may not be able to express that to you in the way that you need her to express that to you. So that's the marriage advice that nobody asked for. I hope you buy my book when it comes out. It's going to be right on the shelf next to Steve Harvey's book. I don't have as many marriages as him, But I do got some advice for you. So if you like the advice, make sure you check out the book that's never actually coming out. Okay, that's the show this week, guys. I appreciate you joining in and listening. If you like this show, make sure you subscribe and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and share it with someone on Spotify, and subscribe to my YouTube page. I'll leave the link in the description if you are listening to this podcast. And as always, I love you guys. I'll see you next Thursday. Peace.